Today's daf in Masechet Eruvin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Ayin Tet. And let me just remind you where we got up to yesterday and what we were talking about. We're talking about this ditch, and the ditch runs across the entire space between two chatzerot. And if the ditch is 10 tvachim deep, then if it's also 4 tvachim wide, so you can't just walk over it easily, it's the equivalent of a wall. And if it's a wall, obviously there's no way to make one Eruv for both of the Chatzeros. Masha Inkein, if you filled it up, then if you filled it up, it would be okay. Now, we spoke about what you fill it up with in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah talked about if you used Kash or Teven, that would not be considered to be a fill. But if you used Ofer or you used Gravel, Tzorot, then it would be a good fill. And that was mashma. It would be a good fill, even though it's stoma. And the stoma means we have no idea whether the guy intends to use this for other purposes. He doesn't intend to use it for other purposes. The deal is that ofar stam is considered to be bottle. So yesterday we were worried about the fact that in the Mishnah in Oyales, the gabi, the din of whether a bayit is considered to have a cholotefach to be a bayis that's maybe tuma. And over there we spoke about if you filled up the house with Teven or Tzorot, it puts together Tzorot and Teven. And it says in both of those cases, it's only if you were Mevatel it Beferish, then it would be Batel, but otherwise not. And over here you're telling me even Minastam, it's considered to be Batel. So how do you explain that? And Rav Huna said yesterday that the Oyalos was going Aliba de Rabbi Yossi. Today, the Gemara says, just the opposite. How can you say it's going Aliba de Rabbi Yossi? So now this is the second line on Ayin Tes Amud Aleph, where we'll begin today. So how can you say that it's talking about Rabbi Yossi? On the contrary, Rabbi Yossi said the opposite in a brayta. The Tanya Rabbi Yossi Omer, Teven ve'in atid lefanoto, areo kistam afar ubatel. That if the guy did not say a word about being a vatalit, but the fact is that he has no interest in moving out this Teven to feed to his animals. And he intended just that he had nowhere to throw it out, so he filled up this unused house with it, right? Then that has the same din as Stam Ofer, where every time you know nothing at all about the Ofer, it's considered to be Botel, and you do not need Bittel. If it's filled the house with Ofer that you intend to use for a project, then that's the same as Stam Teven, where we have no idea whether you're going to use it, and normally you would use it as animal feed, and it's not Batel. So then that would mean that Dafka Rabbi Yossi is the one who holds that the Tzroros and the Ofar is always considered to be Batel, min ha-Stam. So that's exactly the opposite of what the Mishnah in Oyalos said. The Mishnah in Oyalos was talking about the according to the way Rav Huna was claiming, that it would not be considered unless you were mevatelet. This last brisa was talking about over here in the case where the guy was, we know what his intent was, not necessarily needs to say anything. So anyway, obviously, if anything, it's the opposite, right? So Elam Ravasi, look, it's the opposite. The one who said our mission in Erevin, that's Rabbi Yossi. The Mishnah in Eilis that says that you don't look at Tzroros as being Batel unless we know for a fact that the guy was Mevatel at Beferish. So then that wouldn't work out over here. Rav Huna Breider of Yeshua says, excuse me. The whole question is absolutely ridiculous. How can you ask Akasha from the Mishnah in Eilis to the Dinim of Shabbos? Okay. In the Mishnah of Oalos, we're not talking about where there is any question about Moshe, we were not talking about who was Tana Oyalos. We're only talking about who was Tana that Mishnah, because it happened to be that Rabbi Yossi discussed it. You missed that point. So, okay, doesn't matter. Ella, it's no different than any other Masechet. Ella, Omer Avasi, the Mishnah doesn't mean Mantana Erevin. It means who said this Mishnah in Erevin is Rabbi Yossi. Anyway, so Rav Huna Breider of Yeshua says there was absolutely no problem here at all. The situation in Oalos, for heaven's sakes, is not talking the same as Shabbos, even though it's the same material. Suppose you would have filled up the bar on Shabbos with wallets, each containing $1 million. So what would we say? That, who's going to be mevatel a wallet with $1 million? It's Shabbos. So it's muktzah. So on Shabbos, of course, it's batal. By definition, it's batal there for the day. I don't. What does that have to do with leaving something in a house when you're talking about over there? An oil is over there. It needs to be the permanent situation. Why would anybody leave it in the house? You're comparing two different things. Hanach iser Shabbat. Obviously, afilu arnik, even the guy's wallet, he would be mavato because of a muktzah problem. Ravashi Omar. Ravashi says there's another reason why the whole thing is ridiculous. How are you comparing a case of filling up a ditch and filling up a house? Ditches are normally meant to be filled up, for heaven's sakes. So if somebody throws stuff in there, so then fine, he's going to leave it there. You're going to tell me that a house is meant to be filled up. So somebody stored something in a house, that's it, goodbye house. He intends to leave it full of straw or of dirt. Come on, man. So Bishlam Acharitz, that's meant to be filled in. People always fill in a ditch. But by it, you're going to tell him in the Batayme Kaisa Bechlal, there's no connection between the two issues. Now let's get back to the main state of the Mishnah. Again, so the Mishnah was talked, basically this Mishnah is really the mirror image of the Mishnah that we had before. The Mishnah we had before was talking about a wall that was vertical. The Mishnah here is talking about a wall that is essentially horizontal in the sense that since it's a ditch, once it's four tvachim wide, so then already it's considered to be a wall. Now, in the same way that the Mishnah before discussed being memayet the wall by putting up shelves or a ladder, whatever it was, this Mishnah discussed being memayet the wall. Well, it didn't really, did it? I mean, it talked about breaching the wall in the sense that if you build a little bridge by putting a board across it, so that would be making a Pesach, so to speak, in the case of the previous Mishnah. But in the previous Mishnah, we also had the question of can you make the wall shorter effectively by making the area that you're standing on higher? What would be the equivalent to that in this case over here where the wall is, so to speak, horizontal? So although the Mishnah only discussed the question of if you build a bridge using a board across the ditch, says Rava, the only reason that you need 4x4 is where you made it a bridge, and you put the length of this board all the way across the ditch, right? Now you're going to walk on it. But if you want to be memayet the ditch, so let's say the ditch is exactly 4 tvachim, you want it to be slightly less than 4 tvachim, and that way it's considered to be just, you walk straight over it, and it's not considered to be a mechitza at all. So then that's the equivalent of putting a shelf on the bottom, right? Pushing your bookcase up to the wall. So we said before, over there, you don't need for it to get all the way up to the top. You just need to be memayated from Esser. The same thing is true over here. You don't need to put the bridge across the whole thing. If you want to take a little bit of a board and put in a bracket underneath and then put the board out, I don't care if it's for a half an inch. If you put the board out for a half an inch along a length of 4 tvachim, then you made the gap less than 4 tvachim. If you made the gap less than 4 tvachim, it's the same as making a wall less than 10 tvachim high. So therefore, the Mishnah was only talking about if you use it as a bridge, avala orko, filko shunami. If you want to put it along the length of the ditch, then even if you just put an inch of it, that would be enough, as long as now it's less than arba'a. That's perfectly. Okay, next case that we had in the Mishnah was we have 2 mirpasot. So you've got a balcony that's sticking out. Remember, according to Rashi, he was talking about these are 2 homes, both on the 10th story of an apartment building. They're sticking out over the same Rosh Hasharabim. And what you want to do is to be able to carry into the neighbor's home or mirpeset by putting a bridge between your mirpeset and the next mirpeset. So we said you could do that and just use a board, and then the board cuts across. But the Mishnah specified that they have to be Zu keneged zu, they have to be precisely one facing the other. So Rava says, let me just explain something. When we use those words, zu keneged zu, we don't mean literally, okay? So let's define it. Obviously, the Mishnah is saying they need to be actually parallel to each other. And that alone is enough. But if it's not, not. Okay. So then if that's the case, the same thing would be true. If one of them is slightly higher, it's offset, not in terms of the apartment building, maybe being a little juts out a little bit in one place, so that in order for me to get to the other guy's porch, I'm going to have to take a board and put it on a little angle which cuts across the corner that's jutting out of the building. Ugh, that's a little dangerous for me to walk. I'm not comfortable with that. The same thing is true is if one of these porches is a little bit higher than the other one. So now it's not only a bridge that's horizontal, it's also got a vertical component. I'm not comfortable with that either. So that's why Rava says, that's why the Mishnah was saying that has to be aligned. Because, I mean, this thing, again, is the equivalent of the issue of the logistics that we recognized yesterday as being an important component, not only the technicality of whether you have a petach, but whether we have a logistically viable petach. That true over here, it's not logistically viable. In the same way that we discussed yesterday, if the ladder's all the way up against the wall. So there were those who held it's not logistically viable. People are not comfortable climbing that kind of ladder. It's got to have a little bit of an incline. So the same thing would be true. But in the opposite sense over here, if it isn't completely straight, then people are not very happy playing the flying man, or the man on the flying trapeze of the circus over here, who with the greatest of ease is going to simply walk across from one merpeset to another. I mean, come on. So because of that, the Mishnah said it has to be perfectly aligned. But let me explain what do we mean by perfectly aligned. Again, love what kicks in. Because if we say they're not aligned, we mean that they're not aligned even to the extent of being able to use lovut. So yesh bein zeh lezeh shloshat tefachim. But if you don't have a space of shloshat tefachim, either in terms of the vertical distinction or between how far out one of them juts from starting the building from where the other one starts the building, then that's just called a slightly crooked berpeset, you know. So it's gezustra akumahi. Okay, but that people accept that type of thing as a matter of course. It's a little bit crooked. I have to step up. But more than that, it's already two completely scary things, and we won't logistically be able to utilize it. And now we are ready for our Kapitan, who Baruch Hashem is also able to show his face along with those of great courage who do not suffer apparently from problems of zoomophobia and things like that. And they're very happy to share their presence, and I'm grateful to them. And so go ahead, dear Kapitan.
Oh, with a build up like that.
Thank you. Matbein, shebein shtei chatzirot. Suppose you got this stack of straw. I hate stack, basically, between two chatzirot. It covers the entire distance. And there's no way to get between one and the other unless you're looking for a needle. And then that would mean, if it's gavoa asarat fachim, then you would have to have two separate eruvim. There's no way, unless you pull the haystack away, there would be no way for you to get away with ein ma'arvim b'chal. You can't make one. And the question is, now, I mean, a haystack has a tendency to be eaten by your animals. So do I need to worry that if I'm going to let the animals get the munchies on my haystack, which is also the machitza between the two chatzeras, that if I'm not careful, they're going to just munch away. And in the end, I'm going to have a mechitza that is no longer 10 tefachim high. And that without realizing it, I'm then going to carry from one to the other, huh? So what do I do about that? Well, no problem. I'll tell you why. Your behemoth doesn't get those kind of munchies. Only humans do. But we'll see that the human has to be careful. Not about munching, though, but about feeding his animal. But the animals are not going to be, remember, in order to make this a real problem, you would not only have to be memayet the mechitza, less than 10 tvachim, it would have to be 10 tvachim along a distance of 10 amos plus. Because if it's within 10 amos, then we just consider it to be a petach. And if it's a petach, it certainly doesn't aser. It just gives you the option that had you wanted to before Shabbos, you could have been made one Erev. That's all. But that much to worry about that the animal is going to reduce the height of the wall across a length of 10 amas? Whoa, no, we don't need to worry about that. And in fact, the both sides can let their animals munch without being concerned that there's going to end up being a hole between the two chatzeres that is more than 10 amas. Okay, so elo machil mikan, velo machil mikan. If lamaisa, that the animals had munched away before Shabbos, and it was less than 10 tefachim, so then, and obviously it was across the entire area, or at least it was over 10 amas, So then the din would have been the exact opposite. You would have had to make only one Eruv, but you wouldn't be able in any way to make two Eruvim. Okay, so now, if that's the case, says Rav Huna, look, it's true that animals don't get the munchies, but a person cannot take the straw from the matbein and start feeding them from it, putting it into a basket. Because over there, humans, they're not careful about how much you take. You know, they got this idea of their eyes are bigger than their tummies. So they do that for the animal also. And if I'll take a bunch of it now, maybe then I'll have what to eat all day. There we are worried. Wait a minute. I mean, there we are worried. I mean, maybe we're worried over there also about the fact that it was set aside to be the mechitzas. It's muktzah, Rashi suggests. Could be either way. But in any event, what you're saying is that I would be allowed to take the animal and bring it right over there to the straw, and I don't have to worry that he's going to be over on the isser that I just said of himself picking up the straw and giving it to the animal. Rav Huna just claimed that that was usser. To give it, right? To actually take it yourself. Now, the problem is that Rav Huna had quoted Rabbi Chanina in a different case, that if you've got grass that's attached to the ground and this animal is munching on the grass, this, you can take your animal, bring your animal to a spot of nice, fresh, delicious, yummy-smelling grass, and the animal's going to be eating and is going to be pulling the grass out of the ground. You don't have to worry and make a gezerah. Well, if the guy sees this delicious grass, his animal is going to bend over and take out some of the grass and feed it to his animal. No, that's not the kind of thing that people are going to do in an Issur D'oraisa. They're going to lose track of an Issur D'oraisa. No. But suppose you have stuff that was actually muktzah, right? So for instance, maybe you have edible straw, but your intent was you had set it aside to use for a building project. You're going to use it for cement on Sunday. So over there, it was muktzah. There, you're not even allowed to bring your animal over there. Why? Because there, we're afraid that you're going to take it and you're going to feed it, and you're not allowed to do that because it's muktzah. So over here in this case, why does Rav Huna say your only problem is you're not allowed to take it yourself with your hands, but you are allowed to put your animal over it? If Rav Huna himself brought Rabbi Chanina, who says that if you're not allowed to do it, and it's only an issur d'rabbanan, then you're not allowed to bring your animal there to do it either. It seems to be exactly the same case. Says Gemara, you're right, it is exactly the same case. Rav Huna never said that you could bring your animal there. He said you could let your animal go there by standing in front of it. So when every time it tries to go in another direction, you stand in front of it until it finally gets there, you know, like you need to do for your robot vacuum cleaner if it makes the spot. And you stand in front of it, and then it goes back and does it. And the same thing over here with the behemoth. Alon is looking at me like I'm crazy. His robot vacuum cleaner never misses a spot. Okay, so the koyim la ba'apah, it's talking about you stand in front of it, the azda va'achla. Okay, next thing we had. So Rav Huna said you're not allowed to put anything into your basket. That's true? You're not allowed to put anything into your basket? Vatanya. Now, this is an interesting case. You've got a open house, meaning it's sort of like a pergola. So it's got like this roof, and it's filled with, again, a haystack that separates it to one side. And then on either side of this house, you have another similar kind of house where the guy really is an open wall to this house. It's sort of like also more of a pergola kind of thing that the guy lives in. And on the other side, in the other chatzer, you also have a pergola. And both chatzeros have these sort of shed-like affairs that are open to the middle shed-like affair. So in that case, if you've got across this entire middle shed, you've got this haystack, so then the din is you can only make two separate Eruvin because you have a mechitza across the whole way. There is no way to make one Eruv. And the halacha is, it says over here, the halacha is that the guy who lives in Chatzar A, he could take the straw and put it into his basket. And the guy who lives in Chatzar B, whose house opens into this pergola, also could take from his side. I thought, Rav Huna, I thought you said you're not allowed to do it yourself. I thought you said you're only allowed to let the animal eat it. So how do you explain that? Let's first finish the braita. Then, so if the straw gets, because of this, it gets eaten down, and now it's less than 10 tefachim high in the middle of Shabbos, if this happens. So now both of these chatzeros become usher, because now all of a sudden you have two chatzeros that are really now one chatzer, and they didn't make an Erev together. So how are you allowed to carry? So what should you do if this happens in the middle of Shabbos? Says the Braiser, what you should do is one of the guys should lock up his house, and then he should be mevatel his rights to that middle house, to the people in the other chatzer. And then he would not be allowed, of course, whereas it's pshita, he would not be allowed to carry from that, under that pergola. And the guy in the other chatzer is in the equivalent house in the other chatzer, he would be allowed to, because he was mevatel as rishus. Now, why in the world he needs to lock up his house is not clear. I mean, normally you do a bittul rishus, you don't have to lock up your house. So it's a little weird. And anyway, listen, if he locks up his house, I mean, how does he use the chatzer? We never had anything like that to lock up your house. So, I mean, so Tosafot says maybe lock up your house means that you lock it when you don't need the door. And that way you have this constant reminder. Obviously, if you need to get in the house, you unlock the house, but then you have to lock it again. That's the point. So it's there to serve you as a reminder. It doesn't mean you lock up your house. You're not going to be able to go into your house because you're not mavanto your house. The same thing would be true, continues the Braiser. We haven't gotten a chance to talk out the question anyway. We will in a moment. Same thing would be true if you've got this ditch, and the ditch is right at the end of the tchum of city A on the north side, and is right at the end of the tchum of city B on the south side, so that city A is allowed to take stuff out of the ditch up till halfway, which is their tchum. And we're not afraid that city A is going to start taking from the south side and bring it out of the tchum into their rishus. And city B can do the same thing. They could take from the south side, and we're not afraid that they're going to take from the tchum of city A on the north side. Anyway, fine. Now, before we get to analyze the Braita, it's quite evident that the Braita is saying the opposite of Ravuna. It says, Katani miyot zenoten betor shalo, vizenoten betor kupato. Each one can put it into his basket. You said you're not allowed to touch it. So what the heck is going on? Says the Gemara, well, I mean, you could give a very simple logistical answer. Over here, you're talking about you have a roof, right? That was the point. The middle, what we call the house, I mean, it's really open on the sides, but whatever, a shed, a pergola. So it has a reference point, which is the roof that extends over the hay. So then you notice, if all of a sudden there's bigger space between the roof and the hay, obviously the hay is getting eaten down. But if you don't have that reference point on top to be able to see that it's getting to be a bigger hole up to the ceiling, so then you won't notice. So over there, Ravuna holds his exer. Maybe that's the difference. So by it, kiven deikar should say tikra. So ki mevchit min kral milta. But over here, lo min kral milta, we don't recognize that something happened. Okay. Anyway, that answers Ravuna. This Braita leaves me with a lot of hanging questions that I would like to understand. You said that both are usher the moment that the haystack is reduced to less than 10 tefachim, okay? But suppose it was still 10 tefachim high. Now, I want you to imagine the case. So we started with a high haystack, and now the guys are taking it to feed their animals. The stack gets lower and lower. As long as it's still 10 tefachim, it's considered to be a good mechitza. But hold on a second. But it's now lower than it was before, right? I mean, so it used to get up to the roof. Okay, now it certainly doesn't get up to the roof because it's gotten lower. So didn't we have a whole question before? Remember the case of the Mishnah where we've got these different groups of kids that are in this, they're camping out for Shabbos in this big traklin, and we had these curtains that were hanging between the different units. And that was in Machlokes Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai about whether they would need separate eruvin if there's different accesses to the chotzer. Over there, we said, according to one of the approaches, that the question was mechitzot that don't reach the ceiling. If they're temporary mechitzot, are they considered to be mechitzot at all? Wasn't that one of the pshatim we said over there? According to one of those pshatim, they would not be considered to be mechitzot. Over here, it seems very clearly, if the haystack is a mechitzah, and it's obviously a temporary mechitzah, and it does not reach the ceiling anymore, because before it did, and now you've been taking it down and down and down, and now it's only 10 tefachim, doesn't have to reach the ceiling. So you see, afagav the medalia tikra tuva. Doesn't matter how much higher the ceiling is than the 10 tvachim, it's still okay. So shema min ha-mechitzot she'en magiot ha-tikra shuban mechitzot, which would change the way we need to understand the sugya earlier. Okay, here it's saying that it is considered to be a good mechitzah. Omer Abaye, look, not necessarily. I mean, you're making all kinds of assumptions. So let's assume that we start off with this little shed or this pergola in which the entire height of it is really a little bit less than 13 tefachim. So this way, when you are 10 tefachim, you are still lovut to the ceiling because you're within shalosh, right? Shalosha, I mean. And within shlosha tefachim, you're lavud. So maybe that's considered to be mechitzot that are magiot latikra. But in the case where there would have been more than that, maybe it wouldn't have been good. I don't know. Look, you weren't given any data over here. So you can't utilize the braita to say, well, it must be, even if the ceiling is very high. Maybe not. I don't know. It's not a normal case. I mean, it's a case of a shed. It's not the case of a normal bayit. So why would you assume any particular height? So I think that's what it's talking about over here. So the teven, if it's 10, it's within lavud. Ravuna Bered Rav Yoshua says, you don't need to even say that. It could be that the house, the so-called house, in other words, the top of the pergola, is 10 tefachim. Maybe that's all. Anyway, you got, that has to be 13, you know. What if it's 10 tefachim high? And the mechitza that was there before was not 10. The mechitza was slightly over 7. And that made it into a mechitza because of the fact that it was all the way lovered to the roof. Wait a second, but that's not what it says. I mean, the way Abaye was saying it, it says that if, look at the braita, it says if it was nitma'et mi'asara, if the mechitza now became less, the mechitza was made out of the straw. If the straw went down lower than 10, what are you telling me, lower than 7? I mean, it's that's not what it says. So that's why Abaye said the case the way he said it. Ainu diktanu mi'asara. According to the way Ravuna Bered Rav Yoshua was talking, where was it nismayit from 10? It was never nismayit from 10. It was nismayit from 7. Nismayit mi 10 doesn't mean that the straw is less than 10. It means it's no longer a mechitza of 10 because it's no longer within the shalosh tvachim of the ceiling. That's all that it means. Anyway, then the Braita says, okay, on either side, you are not allowed to take, once it gets down less than 10, nobody's allowed to take. Why? Because now the chutzer becomes one chutzer, and now you don't have an Erev. Now, I mean, is that so, Poshet? I thought we had like a big shaila about if you have diurim that are added on Shabbos, and something happens to a mechitza, whether that necessarily osers or not. I mean, that was a big machlokas that we had earlier. And now all of a sudden you're telling me, well, this is a given. For sure, it must mean that if you have new people there, so then it's going to be usher. I don't know. Why didn't we mention that earlier? So you see, the urina boim b'shabbat are they usher everybody else. I mean, way back in the beginning of a second, that was not clear at all. Says the Gemara, how do you know that it means that it became less on Shabbos? Maybe it just means, if at any point it became less, maybe it's referring to before Shabbos. So, dimanimat mi etmol, that's all. So then you need to have an Erev between the two of you. And if not, then it's Aser. But if it was Imud on Shabbos Kufa, so maybe enochinami, maybe you don't need another Erev. If you hold like the Man Yomro says, diorin, that are nitosvim on Shabbat, don't demand an Erev. Okay, let me take the next piece. So it says, so what should you do? You should lock up your house and be mevatel rishus. Why do you need to do both of those things? I understand. If you locked up your house, then ipso facto, you're mevatel your rishus, no? Because you're saying, I don't have access to it. We always called adchele dasha ba'ape. You slam the door in their face. Is that equivalent, right? I mean, that's what you're doing over here. You literally slam the door in their face. I don't understand. Why do you need both of these things? Why can't you just be mevatel rishus without locking the door? The answer is the Gemara. No, it's saying either or, obviously. You must be right. I mean, why would you need both? So it's saying either be no'el et beto or be mevatel reshuto. That's what it's saying. Or, you know what? Wait a second. It could be that this Tana holds you need to do both. Now, obviously, in order to be mater the other guy, you don't need to do both. As far as the other guy is concerned, you were mevatel reshus. That's all. I don't care how your mevatar rishus is locking the door, telling him your mevatar rishus. Your mevatar rishus. Our problem is with you, because you are used to carrying, and if you don't do something that is going to make it clear to you that you must not carry, what is going to stop you from just doing what you do every Shabbos for the past 20 years? So because of that, you have to lock your door for your sake. Because kiven de dashbei, since you're habitually carrying over there, atila tiltula, you may end up, because of that, carrying. Okay. Rashi says that this is true of every bittul according to this mandiyama. Which Tosfos says, I mean, that seems crazy. Over here, it's a different situation because it's not really a house. It's like this shed kind of thing, this pergola, you know. But, I mean, where do we find that anybody ever said that in addition to being mevatar rishus, you need to lock up your house? I think this is a unique case. But as Tosfos makes clear, even according to Rashi, who says that this mandiyama holds you would need to do both, obviously it doesn't mean you're sacrificing the use of your house. I mean, that's connected all of the sugyas that we had. It could only mean that you need to lock the door when you go out, and you need to lock the door when you go in, and then that way you'll remember. It doesn't mean you don't have use of the house. Okay, so then it says you are usher, and your friend is mutter. Well, obviously you are usher. Isn't that the whole point? If you're mevatar rishus, I mean, I need the Mishnah to tell me again that a mevatar rishus is usher. Isn't that pretty clear, no? No, no. This is brilliant. What it's saying is that if the other guy finishes using it, and he wants to give you the option, so then he comes to you and he says, okay, now I'm going to be mevatar my rishus to you. You can't do that. That's the point. Because it's coming to teach you, kamashmon de'ein mevatar v'chozer mevatrim. And earlier we had this big discussion. Can you be mevatar, then stop and have the other guy be mevatar? That was the question of whether it's achuka v'tlula. Is it making a joke of the whole thing? And people will end up not taking the gezera seriously. So remember that old sugya. So over here, the Mishnah is goofa coming to tell me that you will not be able to carry even if the guy gives back the rights and his own rights back to you. Okay. Then the Braisa says, and the same idea would apply to this ditch between two Tchumim of Shabbat, where the north side is part of the north city and the south side is part of the south city. And we're not worried about you're taking the Teven from the other side. Well, I understand. Why not? I mean, we have two situations. One has to do with an Isser Darabonin of carrying in a Chatzar. One has to do with an Isser Darabonin of carrying it outside of the Tchum. If you're telling me I don't have to worry about it for the Chatzar, that means that I don't make a Gezerah Midrabonin, that I may take it from the wrong place. So then it's the same thing. Why would I have thought that it's different? It's more Chamur. The Tchum between the cities, that would be more Chamur than the case of the Chatzar. So it's Pshita. It's no, because what if we're going to Rabbi Akiva? And Rabbi Akiva, he holds the Tchumim or Nisr D'Oraisa. So you might have thought, okay, I understand you're not going to worry about the din of the Chatzar, because that's an Nisr D'Rabbanah, but maybe Ligs are Dimati L'Chlufi, maybe you may accidentally take from the other Tchums Teven, Kamash Malan, that we don't have that kind of gezeira. That would be a big Kiddush, which brings us up to our Sir Richard again. Thank you. So now we continue with what was started a long time ago, Ketzad Me'arvim. How do we make an Erev, but how do we make a Shituf? Never talked about that exactly. How do you go about making a shituf in a chotzer, now in a mavli? Now, it's obvious that you can make a shituf the same way you make an Erev. I mean, but that would be an awfully busy kind of thing to do. I mean, because that would mean that you'd have to get somebody who goes around ringing all the doorbells in all of the chatzeres and asking everybody to donate food for the shituf. I mean, it's not practical. So what can you do? So what you could do is something very simple. You could take your own barrel that has enough of the stuff, we'll see how much you need, for everybody. You put that barrel of your own stuff into your chatzer, and you say, listen, I'm giving this to everyone in the mavli. They all have a share in the food in this barrel. And then you let somebody be zocha, the same way that we do for an Erev. Remember, we make an Erev tafshilin, so you give it to somebody to pick it up. That's what you do. So give it to, if you want to, you can give it to your son. You could give it to your daughter as long as they're adults and they have their own rishus. Or you could give it to your Eved v'shivcha if they're Ivriim, because you don't own them. You could give it to your wife, assuming, again, the Gemara discusses elsewhere, your wife would have to have her own house in the chotzer that she has to give her own Erev for. But you can't use your little kids. And according to some, this means kids who are, doesn't matter their age, it just matters if they are still dependent on your table and eating in your home. So you can't give it to them, and you can't give it to your own slaves that are avdav shivchos ha'knani, because their hands are viewed as mere extensions of your own hand. Omer Rav Yehuda, this idea, if you were mezaka it, it has to be lifted up from the ground, a tefach. Because if you don't lift it up from the ground in the tefach, then you didn't transfer it, because it's in your own rishos. So what made the transfer to the other people? And that, as Tosis points out, does not mean that normally Hagbah as a Kenyan, you do not need to lift it up three Tvachim, so it shouldn't be Lavud, which is a Shita, that it's not considered to be Hagbah, Pachas B'Shlosh Tvachim. It may well be, says Tosis, that this is a special Kula that the Rabbanan gave. We found so many of these Kulas, including the din of being Mavatal Rishos, renting Rishos, things that can be done on Shabbos. There's a lot of Kulas that we are allowing it to be Chal Ben Hashmoshes, even in a fashion it would have been Usser if it weren't Ben Hashmoshes, etc. So this is one of those Kulas, says Tosis. But normally you might have to lift something in order to be Kina. You might have to lift something, indeed, Shlosh Tvachim. And Rava says, listen, there were two dinim that I actually learned from the Sabbath of Pumpadisa, which is Rav Yehuda's yeshiva. One is this, that you can lift, you need to lift it up a tefach, you don't need to lift it up more than a tefach. Both of those things I learned. And the other din is that if you say Kiddush, you must taste the wine in order to be yotze. And tasting the wine in order to be yotze is not a din in Rov Kos, Riba Akim. It's a din in Malolugmav, and that's similar to the Aloch on Yom Kippurim. And Malolugmav, even though it means filling up both of your cheeks, it does not mean that la Aloch. Malolugmav means if you would take everything in your mouth and transfer it to one side, the maximum that your cheek could hold. That is the real meaning of Malolugmav. So if you drank that amount, and that depends on the individual, as Tosis points out again, I mean, because this is one of the things that we said goes in the individual, but it's about, in fact, half of a revius. So it would be about, again, it depends on the chazanish or whatever, but you could get away with drinking, even according to Reb Chaim Na, about an ounce and a half. Okay, so you've got to drink that, and if you don't, you're not going to be yotze. And Reb Chaviva said, look, there were some other things that I also learned from the Sabbath of Pumpadisa, and that was they paskin, like Reb Yudon Meshmuel, that Osim Edura L'Chayab Shabbat, you're allowed to make a fire on Shabbos for a woman who has given birth, even though it's an Isser D'Oraisa, because we consider her to be very, very susceptible to chilling. And therefore, we can assume she's going to need it. They thought that meant you can only do this for a Chaya. You can't do it normally unless you've established that somebody is in imminent danger. But you can't assume that somebody needs, just because they're cold and they're sick, that you're allowed to make a fire. And so that's what we thought. We also thought that this is only true if the weather is cold. I mean, if it's hot, it's 80 degrees in the house, why would we be making a fire? So bimot hachama, you can't. And that is not true, because Omer Chibar Ravan Shmuel, there are other cases where we can assume that a chill is dangerous. Let's say somebody let blood and all of a sudden he feels chilled. You make him, again, without any further ado, you make him a Madura, even on Shabbos, even in the middle of the summer, on the hottest day of the summer, because chills have nothing to do with the external temperature. And therefore, both of your assumptions were wrong. There was one other thing that the Sabbath of Pumpadisa taught me, says Amemar, and that was, what defines an Asherah tree? Interesting, we're just talking about the Asherah, right? So what defines an Asherah tree? I mean, do you have to know for a fact that you saw people worshiping the tree? Omar Rav, no. If Lamaisa, they put up guards, the Meshartei of Degilulim, they got like a couple of priests or acolytes that are always assigned to watch this tree, make sure that nobody does anything with it. So if there's Shomrimoto, you have to assume that it's a holy tree. Or if they refuse to eat any of its fruit, now they're not eating its fruit because obviously it's holy fruit. So that shows that they must worship the tree. Shmuel says, you don't even need that. If you hear people saying that we are dedicating these dates to the beer that will be made in the holy temple of Nitzrafe, was the name of some kind of local idol in his area. These things people don't remember very long. But that is enough to be, because since they drink it, B'yom Chagam, if they drink it on their holiday, you have to assume that it's a holy tree. And there, the Sabine Pumbedisa, they said that the halacha is like Shmuel in this issue. Now, what bothers me a little bit is, you said you have to lift it off a tefach, and the Gemara says in the Braita, for the Braita, it says, how do you do a shituf? You bring your barrel, whatever, wine or oil or dried up figs or fruit, whatever, if it's his, then he has to be mezakeh to other people. And if it's theirs, then he has to make sure that they want that. Because if they don't want it, remember, your Erev is not good. If they don't want to share their food, we said if a guy is like no, that was the case of Abaye said, I can't afford to share the food. So there was no way for me to make the shita for the mavik. So you have to ask them, and you have to lift it off the ground. But only a mashu. You said a tefach. How come it says over here a mashu? That's a mashu means a tefach. I mean, it doesn't mean nothing. It doesn't mean a micron, for heaven's sakes. He just means it doesn't have to be higher than lavud. But there is some shear. And that shear is, in fact, one tefach. That would be the idea.